At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
The link to Moscow is indirect, but it is impossible to ignore. In the weeks before Koberger's death, Kaylee Gonsalves told friends she felt like someone was watching her.
Yeah.
She said once she was letting her dog Murphy out, she saw someone staring from the woods near the house on King Road. There's your graphic for that segment, Todd.
Exactly.
Harriet standing in the woods. A surviving roommate later told investigators that Kaylee often mentioned this fear enough that she didn't want to be in the house alone. That's what I'm saying. I was kind of getting to that earlier, and then I kind of got off on another tangent. And I think we're going to miss the Amish people today. We might have to do that tomorrow. What do you think? Do you think that the King Road house and the date that he chose to go do that was he leading up to that? Was he planning for that? Or did he just finally get the nerve that day and said, damn it, it's my birthday. I'm going to go do this shit. Or was he ready and willing to do this at all these other homes, but never quite had the nerve to do it? Or were they all dry runs?
Go ahead, Stacey, if you've got a thought.
No, I don't. That's just, oh, God.
The more that we've kind of talked about this with some of our experts and speaking with Jennifer Coffin-Daffer and all that kind of stuff, I think he really had a plan for his birthday. I think that the address had something to do with it. It would be an awful, odd coincidence that it didn't.
Yeah.
And I think he was... Just my personal opinion, I have nothing to base this on, but just knowing what I know of him through our conversations and our discussions, I think he was just, these other things he was doing were just things that he was doing to kind of enjoy himself. Maybe leading up to, you know, testing a little bit of this out, testing a little bit of that out, but I think he was just enjoying himself. I think he really planned the Idaho murders, and I think the numbers are tied together in some way, shape, or form.
I guess, do you think that was him trying to be tricky? Like, this is my little signature. I'm going to do this on certain, like, if he's planning to do more of it, was that going to be his calling card, doing it on certain numeral days that made sense as part of some sort of code? Because other than just the numbers lining up, okay, here's your birthday. It's 1122 King Road, and it's pretty close. It's 11, the date of the murders themselves. Was that just him in a really dense way going, look at that. That's a numerology, you know, that this is creepy. This is going to be because it just seems there's a lot of loose ends. If you're just going to plan it on numerology the fact that the murder scene was what it was, and to have the confidence to walk in there and think you're going to off 4 people. I don't think he walked in there knowing there was going to be 4 people he was going to kill. I think it was just going to be like 1 or 2, if that. I wonder, maybe he, I just wonder how much he was planning it, or how much it just went awry with the people. Maybe that is the thing. The numbers were the thing. He thought he was going to get in and get out. The numbers were all just going to line up and look creepy. But the fact that there was all those other people in there is what really ended up throwing him for the loop and surprising him.
You know, all I want for my birthday is just a nice dinner and flowers. I mean, am I not reaching far enough for the stars here? I just, what is wrong with somebody that this is what they want to do to gift themselves?
I think what you should do is tell a special someone that, hey, you ever hear of boudoir photos? I want you to take some like these, my man.
Oh, my God.
And if he does it, he's a keeper.
Yeah, that's right.
So get a new pair of Levi's that don't yep. quite fit so your muffin top bleeds over.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see that selfie of your ass from yes. a mirror perspective, right? Because was yes. that a reflection?
Yes. And you have to request that he puts a like a large textbook in where his ass is so it looks like Koberger's. So it's just like flat and there's nothing there because you want to be as authentic as you can to the Koberger.
There you go, Stacey. I'm just giving you what you want. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, honey.
You're a little early, but I'll take it.
I knew you would.
I'll take it. Thank you.
What do you think he's thinking? And do you think he's going, damn, I look good in those jeans?
Oh, absolutely.
I think he is.
He is so freaking proud of what he has to see there.
And again, just if you take the Brian Koberger out of it, maybe he's been through a lot with his weight. I mean, somebody who's been up and down with my weight in my life. So when I lose a little weight, I feel good about myself.
Sure.
I'm not going to take an ass picture in the bathroom, but so.
You should, Todd.
Is that what you're taking an ass picture in my life of? And I don't think I've ever taken a body. Like I don't even take selfies, you know, unless it's like, oh, we need a headshot for something. You know, it's.
It's what I'm loving about this conversation with you guys is it's not just creepy to me as a woman. It's super creepy to you guys, too. And I appreciate that because it should be creepy to everybody.
It's extremely creepy.
Some guys would look at that and go, what? He's happy about his body. He's taking photos. And we may even have somebody in the comments who can't see what's wrong with this.
I don't know. I'm sure there's people who don't see what's wrong with it. I mean, it's the same people that I've seen out there. I was rushing this morning trying to, cause this story popped up. I'm like, shit. So I'm trying to get it together. And then I, of course, you know, I see some buddy that posted some video about why would Koberger admit to crimes he didn't commit? And it's his mother. His mother made him admit to crimes he didn't commit. Like, who in their right mind is still sitting out there thinking that Brian Koberger didn't do this? I'm sorry. If you have empathy and sympathy for Brian Koberger, knowing what we know about Brian Koberger and the evidence that exists out there against him, I would question you being alone with a female, alone with anybody, really. I would wonder where your track record has been. Where's your GPS going to put you at night? If you're sitting there sticking up for Brian Koberger to this day, I'm going to guess you may also be a predator or have predatory tendencies. Just a thought. You want to see something, say something? I'd look at those fuckers very closely.
Yeah, that's frightening.
Very, very closely, because there is something not right with that way of thinking. So that's the latest on Koberger, the pictures, the new claims of stalking, all sorts of fun that we can break down. And everybody, do look into those numbers, look into those dates, see if you can figure out a correlation as to why those things were on that piece of paper like that. That was very, very bizarre. In just a little bit, we're going to talk about the Baby Emmanuel Haro case and Jake Haro and how this system completely broke down in every which way and form. Siobhan Scott going to be joining us, psychotherapist and author. That's coming up in just a few minutes. But first, let's go to Jennifer Coffendaffer and a conversation I just had with her about Brian Koberger and about some more pictures, about the pictures from within his house. Here's that conversation. Stay with us.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The case against Brian Koberger, obviously, he's in jail for the rest of his life. But that doesn't mean there's not new pieces of this puzzle that we are finding and unwrapping and putting into the puzzle going, oh, well, this might make a little bit more sense. We're going to talk about some of the images from that apartment that have been released, the hundreds and hundreds of images from Brian Koberger's apartment, his office, and there's some interesting findings in there. including the medication that he was on. Yes, it was blocked off, but we have figured out what it was because there was a medical code that was not blocked off. And we're going to talk with Jennifer Coffendaff, a retired FBI special agent, about that today. But Jennifer, let's start with this. The newly released images from the apartment, it really gives us kind of a rare, intimate look at the environment that he inhabited in the aftermath of the murders. And I kind of think of this almost like a, not even as an apartment, it is like a habitat because he's kind of like a lizard. And it's just like, oh, well, there's his feeding bowl over there and there's his little water thing. There's disturbing clarity in what was left behind, from the criminology text to the birthday cards sent after the killings, cleaning supplies, blood stains, chilling handprints. It's not all just clutter. It's a story that is... That's being told. Let's look at some of this. Investigators found the graded essays and academic files, some critical of his writing and what he was putting out there to his professors. What did you glean off of? Let's start with that. Some of the papers, some of the academic pieces that were found in his apartment.
Well, I have to say, and I wasn't a PhD student in criminology, but I was a criminology major. And when you look at the different papers that are written, quite frankly, I thought everything seemed sort of routine in terms of what you study in mm-hmm. criminal justice. So it didn't jump off the page like I think it might be to some people because mm-hmm. they haven't studied it. So it was nothing that I found too profound, if you will. I thought it was interesting, though, that he talks about the lack of training with police officers. So mm-hmm. he knew that. We all know that. Most of us know that. They go through a very short training period, and that's all the training they ever get for the rest of their career, mm-hmm. other than they don't even get training in shooting. They go mm-hmm. out and they qualify with their 50 or 60 rounds once a year, and that's it. So their training is literally OJT, mm-hmm. and that's why there's, you know, mistakes made. And he well knew that. I did think that was interesting, almost like he was sort of counting on it.
There's birthday cards there as well, dated November 21st of 2022, just days after the actual murders, which, I don't know, that's an interesting find. And the thought I'm just having there is, it was so close to his birthday that these crimes took place, and he'd been stalking for quite some time. Do you think in some way, shape, or form, he chose this date to be his own little pre-birthday present?
I do. I don't think it's a stretch to say anything like that. Think of all the times that you said, you know what? I'm going to take this trip. It's a week in advance of your birthday. I'm going to take it. I'm going to buy this something for myself because, you know what? My birthday, it's coming up. It's around the corner. Mm-hmm. And it makes so much sense to me when you see the thumbs up selfie combined with the timing. You know, it just makes all the sense in the world that this was some sort of gift to himself in part. I know that sounds horrible. Yeah. That's what I really believe.
No, I mean, it does. Of course, it sounds horrible. But yeah, when you put that together, it's another ode to himself, mm-hmm. you know, for someone that really just thinks the world of himself. Well, mom seemed to as well. We saw that that birthday card in there with who was it? It was Teddy Roosevelt, I believe, riding a dinosaur. And mom made some interesting notes on the card. I don't have it directly in front of me at this second, but it was alluding to his personality. One part being kind of the more formal academic, the Teddy Roosevelt, the other being this dinosaur that's out of control, that's just knocking things down and has no self-control, nothing. It's just out there, this rage in the universe. It's interesting that mom honed in on that when she was walking through Walgreens picking out the card, and how accurate that really does seem to be of his personality. I'm not going to take the credit for that observation. Robin Dreek had that this morning with us. I'm curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I thought it was very interesting. I posted that card right away. I also thought it was interesting the date of his birthday coinciding, just it's just interesting with the, 1122, when he decided to do the murders with 1122 King Road, just kind of one of those things. Do I think he did it because of that? You know, did he choose that address because of that? No, but it's just kind of one of those weird things. But definitely noticed that with the card. It blared off the page, in my opinion, that he had a grandiose view of himself and it wasn't missed by his mother.
God, the numerology is getting weird on this, isn't it?
It is. And that's all it is. But I tell you, it's just over and over again. You know, I keep finding these little, nuggets.
I mean, not in no way saying it's like supernatural or ghostly. It's more like, did he plan it this way? Did he seek out these numbers to do things in certain ways? But again, he's a copycat of a lot of things. So it could just be a couple places where these numbers line up. And it's like, he thinks this is some, you know, in-depth look at me and how great my thinking is. The apartment appeared very Spartan, bare walls, stripped shelves, minimalist storage. In your experience, I mean, does that minimalism, is that an attempt to, you know, erase personal emotion, is show he doesn't have any emotion, you know, or to create any sort of psychological distance from anything, including a setting that one would call home?
Well, you ready for this, Tony? Because
yeah.
I might throw a wrench in that philosophy.
All right.
I really believe that I want to see his apartment before the murders.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to have seen that. I bet you it looked more like his icebox and his pantry.
Mm-hmm.
This is my point. He, just like they said, he dismantled that car and put it back together to make sure he wiped it clean. I think he did that with his apartment. He didn't want any possibility of any blood, any pet hairs, any anything being found at a later time. I think he cleaned, he scrubbed. I think he made that apartment that sterile. I don't think it was that sterile before the murders.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. I just don't think it was that sterile. I think that's why we see no shower curtain and all the other sterileness of that place. I think he got rid of anything.
You make a good point. I mean, he did it with the car. We know that, basically described as disassembled. Because I mean, it almost feels like when I look at that apartment, I said earlier on the show today, I said, it looks like he's staying at like the Residence Inn or something, where you're just there for a few nights, you're in town and then you're out, you put a few things in the closet, you know, whatever, and then you're in and out. But this is where he's living for long periods of time, but to not have anything there, it looks like he's getting it ready to sell or to leave or to move out. But that does make a lot of sense. His car was almost, I mean, you know, disassemble your car, but I guess you clean it up before you sell it. It kind of had that same sort of vibe to it. I that's a very good observation. I'd agree with that. Among the recovered items, a lot of cleaning supplies, which points to that, a box of bear spray. Odd combinations for the context. I mean, how do these elements become more than just supplies in interpreting suspect behavior? Or at this point, is it just kind of random things that we're finding in this house? He got rid of anything that would have been more questionable.
There is no way that, in my opinion, that bear spray is random or just something he had around. This goes back to my belief that, and I've said this from day one, that he hid those garments, he hid that knife, because for him to return to them, just like Bundy would return to dead bodies and get off, mm-hmm. I think he was going to return to those items, indicia of the crime, his reminders, that precious knife, and get off. And I think it's hidden well within a wooded area somewhere. And mm-hmm. I think that bear spray was to protect himself when he went into that environment.
So wouldn't it have been used against people? It was to protect him to get back to his hidey hole, basically.
That's what I think.
That makes sense. Robin also has the same sort of theory. He brought it up on the show, I think, initially before a lot of folks did. Even talking about some specific locations, if you look back, you know, where his car would be, some of those parks, he's been wondering if maybe that hidey hole resides in one of those areas. What are your thoughts on where maybe this hidey hole might be?
Well, I think the initial hidey hole was close to that Moscow area in that circuitous way that he took and the time that was spent after the murders and before he arrived back at the apartment. So I think that was an initial hidey hole. I think there was a secondary hidey hole that occurred en route from Moscow to Pennsylvania. Again, a very circuitous route, a route no one would take, especially on a long trip, unless they just wanted to see, you know, the greatest, biggest ball of twine somewhere if they were on this sort of mission.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. There's no reason for him to take that route. He had that shovel, which again, a lot of people said, well, you know, the snow shovel, you know, I have had this conversation. I don't think that was a snow shovel. There was dirt in it. We don't know what the shovel was. That is one of the pieces I am dying to see. But, you know, the FBI thought it was important enough that they took the dirt and compared it to all these other dirts from all these other places that were en route in that weird route he took to get back home. So, yes, I mean, this is telling me as an FBI agent, this is what I would have done if I had a shovel. Why do you have that shovel with him?
Why? Exactly. I think we should all get together some weekend with metal detectors and go visit these parks and see what we can find.
He's so interesting. I mean, that K-bar knife, for people who don't know, and I really need to take a picture with it. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Yum.
Tony, it's huge. Yeah. I bet you it's about this big, like from the top of my fingers to here. You know, this isn't the little.
It's not a little like knife that you would think, you know, oh, let's put this here. This is a killing machine. And it has some space in whatever box it's sitting in under the ground.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.